Regaining my composure, I asked, "But did Paolo come by chance to this station?"
"No, he didn't. He was brought here by Alfredo himself, who felt he needed to discipline his own soul. Although our friend is now in charge of this house of love, he disengaged himself from the world under intense vibrations of hate and despair. He suffered greatly in the beginning, although he was never abandoned by his devoted, selfless wife. However, he was unable to see Ismelia until he finally managed to disentangle himself from the manifestations of hate. After receiving help in Campo de Paz, he understood what he needed to do. As soon as he had acquired some merit, he interceded for his unfaithful friend and went looking for him out in every corner of the abyss. Alfredo so nobly dedicated himself to his self-improvement that he earned the position of administrator of this aid station. He brought his ward along with him and currently treats him like a brother. But you mustn't think that he achieved this spiritual victory just because of the fact that he wanted it. He wanted it, sought it out and nourished it. Now he has it. He has been conversing with Paolo daily for many years. First, he approached the patient with the need for reconciliation, next, as a charitable person, later on, he gained understanding by comparing their situations, then, he felt compassion, and soon thereafter, sympathy. And now he has achieved true fraternity, the sublime love of a brother for his ex-enemy. After a short pause, he spoke again, enthusiastically, "As you can see, Jesus' lesson, knock and it shall be opened to you, is very broad. On the plane of the flesh, we insist on knocking at the door of outward things, looking for favors and advantages. But here, we have to knock at the door of our inner self to find virtue and true illumination." Vicente, who until now had remained silent, asked, "So there's no telling how long Paolo will have to stay here?" Our instructor made a meaningful gesture and concluded, "Soon he will return to Earth. Ismelia has made innumerable intercessions on his behalf, and when his full reason returns, she does not want him to feel humiliated at having been helped by his victims. One of the other sisters, the one who was slandered by him, has already returned, and Alfredo's selfless wife has asked her to receive Paolo as her son as soon as the opportunity arises." Headline: Social Life. In awe, I contemplated the sublime sight of the firmament above the aid station. The sapphire moonlight enveloped everything. The sky was like an endless, very clear blue blanket dotted with sparkling stars. The afternoon clouds had disappeared. Also contemplating the beauty of the night, Alfredo remarked, "Fortunately, the magnetic phenomena have moved out of the area. The measuring devices, however, are still registering an enormous conflict of lower energies." I was about to comment on the beauty of the sky in light of the administrator's remark, when the doorbell rang softly. There were visitors at the door. Alfredo and Ismelia were both smiling. "Friends from Campo de Paz have come for a visit," Alfredo affirmed. "And inviting us to the reception room in the foremost bulwark," he jovially added, "we enjoy a social life here too." "And why not? You have to know how to live." 175. Delighted with this happy note, I followed the owners of the place. I was speechless when I saw a beautiful carriage drawn by two magnificent white horses. It was an interesting, comfortable-looking vehicle, almost identical to the old public carriages from the time of Louis XV that I had seen more than once in old publications. A small family from the next colony, which, according to Aniceto, was approximately 9 miles from the station, had arrived in it. Alfredo introduced us all in gentlemanly fashion, except for Aniceto, who was an old friend of the arrivals. The visitors were the Baselers and their two young daughters. The head of the group was an elderly man, but in excellent shape. The woman also gave an impression of maturity, but displayed the same wonderful vivacity as the two girls. There was a feeling of great happiness. I didn't observe a single note of undignified conventionalism as I might have on Earth. Their gestures, their simplicity, their ease and affectionate words revealed pure sincerity. We were in a social scene inaccessible to falsehood. As we all went back inside amongst great displays of family joy, I was told that the recent arrivals had been friends for a long time and had come to visit Ismailia, who seemed very happy. She had sent invitations to some of the station families, and in a few minutes the castle was receiving crowds of people to take part in the grandeur of the select gathering. I felt quite insignificant in the company of these new friends, so I confined myself to simply listening and observing. Soon after the first moments of their private conversation, I heard Anisato ask Mr. Basler, "How's work going?" The kindly old man answered with a broad smile, "Well, always well. We just can't place too much attention on our fellow incarnate spirits." And he added affably, "It's essential to learn how to serve and move on." Anisato also smiled and remarked, "I know, I know. Human progress certainly isn't a question of mere days. Let's not kid ourselves." And perceiving that Vicente and I might profit from the conversation, Anisato pointed to Alfredo's new guest, explaining, "Our friend Mr. Basler is head of the teams that provide assistance to our brothers and sisters in the physical realm. He has long-standing experience with humans and knows them like no one else. You can learn a lot from what he says." "Not a lot, my dear friend," exclaimed Mr. Basler good-humoredly, "not a lot. I am merely a fellow spirit, fulfilling my duties with the help of divine mercy. I can't do a lot, because of my natural deficiencies." "We're sure that what you have to say will be very beneficial," refuted Vicente, who had been quiet until then. "Anything you can tell us on the subject of assistance will be an invaluable learning experience for us," I said. Our new friend looked at us knowingly and asked, "Did you used to be doctors?" "Yes," we replied at the same time. Mr. Basler thought for a few moments and stated, "I've always liked talking with my friends by referring to the symbols suggested by their profession. But regarding the activities I myself am involved in, I'm afraid I wouldn't have much to say to two practicing doctors." "On the contrary," I insisted, "your explanations would enrich our learning experience." Mr. Basler smiled optimistically and stated, "Don't be so sure. Remember what normal patients are like. Very rarely do they practice preventive medicine. They almost invariably wait for the materialization of illness before seeking medical help. They need anesthetics when they go under the knife. They drop their regimen at the first sign of improvement. They hate the pain that re-establishes their equilibrium. They dislike to be prescribed purgatives. They prefer medications that taste good. And above all, they always think they know more than their doctor." This summarizes the way sick incarnate spirits receive and react to treatment while on Earth. In our area, however, the aggravating circumstances are more substantial because we are unable to work on the soul in the same way a surgeon operates on a patient's tonsils. We are forced to prepare a suitable mental field in order to sow new thoughts, and then watch for their germination, help the tiny sprouts and wait for time to do its work. Our struggle is not simple, because, although the doctor on the earth always has loving relatives ready to cooperate on behalf of the patient, we ourselves encounter enormous legions of elements opposed to our restoring and curative activities. In general, doctors offer help to whomever wishes to receive it, at least in situations of grave danger. We, however, often have to offer assistance to those who do not want it, because they are living behind veils of profound ignorance. "You're right about that," I replied, hearing such logical comparisons. "Nonetheless, it's comforting to know that there are many fellow incarnate spirits in the world ready to take part in this task." Mr. Basler had a meaningful expression on his face, and said, "Not always. Cooperation is another problem. The majority of brothers and sisters who offer themselves for service leave the spirit world with promises to fulfill, but they prefer to live a life of ease. Few depart from this common pattern. We rarely find incarnates who are willing enough to love work for work's sake without expecting some kind of reward. Most are looking for instant gratification. In such a condition, they don't realize that their minds have become dark dwellings, overcrowded with useless elements. As a result of their corrupted reasoning, their sight also becomes confused. They see violent storms instead of a heavenly landscape, and rocky mountains instead of a path leading gloriously upward. Small delusion by small delusion, they form a continent of immense fantasies. From then on, the recapitulation of their earthly experiences is more strongly inclined toward the animal desires, and when they arrive at that juncture, few return to their sacred duties to consider the grandeur of divine blessings. Mr. Basler paused and then continued, and making excuses? In the arena of spiritual assistance, you will someday see how many pretexts are invented by incarnates in order to escape the testimony of divine truth in tasks that are their personal responsibility. The stewards of responsibility say they have just too much to do, the servers of obedience claim a lack of opportunity, the affluent stand guard over their wealth, and the poor, who have received the blessing of poverty, rebel against it. The young say they are too young to cultivate sublime realities, and the elderly declare themselves useless to serve them. Married couples complain about their families, and single people complain that they don't have families. The infirm say they can't, and the healthy say they don't need to. Rarely do incarnates manage to live without contradictions. Mr. Basler seemed willing to continue, but at Alfredo's request, the two young women came to get him and Anicito in order to try to resolve a private problem. Headline, interesting news. Anicito had to leave, so Cecilia and Ordinaire were left in our company. We immediately struck up a lively conversation. Cecilia had been the Basler's daughter on Earth, Ordinaire had been Mr. Basler's niece and she was now waiting for her mother to return to set up a home in the nearby city. Both displayed marvelous mental development, robust intelligence and a remarkable ability to express themselves. While the adults were discussing some private matter in another part of the room, Vicente and I listened to these two young women, enchanted by their poise and energy. I realized that this picture was identical to the social scene on Earth, except that the sentiments were different because they were genuine. There was not a single hint of anyone putting on a false front. There was pure joy, authentic simplicity and unstained sincerity in everything that was said and done. As the conversation progressed spontaneously, Cecilia said graciously, "I've been working for a long time to receive the reward of visiting Nosola. My superiors have promised me the privilege for next year." And smiling, she concluded expressively, "But I have to meet a few important requirements first." "Really?" asked Vicente, surprised. "Requirements?" "That's right. Perhaps you are not fully aware of how privileged your current situation is there. Living in Nosola is a great blessing. Haven't you grasped that fact yet?" We all smiled. And pursuing her line of thought, Cecilia continued, "According to the instructors who visit us in Campo de Apas, your ministries are veritable universities for spiritual preparation. The educational opportunity in them is immense. In order for you to appreciate what a blessing Jesus has given you, I believe you would have to spend a few years in our colony, where the ongoing work of watching and assisting others is much more pressing, more demanding. But we also have many sufferers in Nosola. The Ministry of Regeneration is a hive of thousands of them," I objected. Cecilia, however, revealed a great deal of insight in her remarks. Referring to a hive is a good analogy because it implies the potential for work. "You should realize, however, that the sufferers who arrive at your colony are already on their way to great achievements. The mentally unstable brothers and sisters there have already felt the torture of the sluggish awakening of their consciences, the remorse and regret that are indicative of renewal. They are sufferers who have been improving steadily because of the positive, elevated environment of the city. Wherever the majority live benevolently, the evil of the minority tends to disappear. Therefore, Nosola has a supreme spiritual advantage even for those who weep." I was impressed with what she was saying, and offered, "I myself worked for a while helping out in the Chambers of Rectification." "I have heard several references to that institution," exclaimed Cecilia, who was knowledgeable on the subject, "but based on what my mentor friends have told me, I hold to my opinion. And as if she already knew our work procedures, she asserted, "In Nosola there are many suffering spirits, but in Campo de Paz there are many obsessor spirits. In Nosola there may be many who are still sorrow laden, but in our arena there are many who are rebellious. It is easier to relieve groaning spirits than to assist rebellious ones. In the chambers you mentioned, you correct errors that have already appeared and pains that have already manifested. But here, my friend, we are compelled to struggle with ignorant and perverse brothers and sisters, who are convinced about the dangerous fantasies in which they engage. Thus, we must assist patients who do not believe they are even ill." I had begun to understand the logic of her argument, and realizing that I couldn't counter it, she continued, sure of herself, "Actually, it's quite natural for it to be like that. After all, we are located only a short distance from our incarnate brothers and sisters. And we know the situation's no different on Earth. How many materialists that disguise themselves as philosophers? How many demons don the robe of saints? How many untrustworthy individuals feign generosity and good intentions? Incarnate humankind's influence on our community is strong and unavoidable." Vicente, who had been listening attentively, replied, "I realize that there is obviously a lot of sacrifice in all this. Nevertheless, the work of Campo de Paz must be highly praiseworthy. No doubt about it. The colony's founding is an interesting story. Out of gratitude to Jesus, a group of benefactors decided to organize a colony in his name right in the lower zones. It would function as an institute for the immediate rescue of those in a state of ignorance or doleful guilt, and whom physical death had taken by surprise. The plan earned the Lord's blessing and the colony was founded over 2 centuries ago. Not all evolved spirits, however, appreciate the work of its ongoing assistance. When they leave the earth, most victorious missionaries need to renew their energies as a natural right earned because of their faithful work, and high order mentors have service schedules, which they must obediently follow according to the designs of the Lord. Thus, our work is fast-paced, but our results are slow and we have to wait for co-workers to be educated in the colony itself for everyone's benefit. We receive excellent hour bonuses registered and we are entitled to great intercessory rights. But because of this, we have sizable responsibilities. We never lack selfless instructors who know how useful those who serve in our colony really are. They come from the higher realms to give us encouragement. Our legitimate requests are never denied, and if resources are slow in coming, they explain the situation so that we do not have to worry while we are waiting for them. So, our group always sticks together, and many prefer to postpone embarking on spiritually uplifting undertakings so that they can remain close to old friends, to whom they are united in unfeigned love." I was enchanted by the young woman's explanations. Her few statements contained an entire summary of lessons on sacrifice and merit, fraternal commitment and compensatory solidarity. "Has your family always lived there?" I asked. "My father was rescued by the Campo de Paz benefactors over 50 years ago, and when he had regained his spiritual health, he settled in the colony with an understandable feeling of friendship and gratitude. My mother joined him later, and exactly 20 years ago, old Nina and I were lovingly drawn there by both of them in order to continue in the family sanctuary. So we have been working alongside them from the start." "And do you have many plans for the future?" Cecilia made a gesture that revealed the heart of a dreamer, and replied, "I have many plans and a lot of problems to resolve. But I'm waiting for the arrival of someone who is still on Earth." Headline: Friendly Conversation. We had returned to our friendly conversation about the wonders of Nosola, when old Nina broke in, "Some of the members of our family visit your city from time to time. Our sister Isora was married in Campo de Paz 3 years ago and lives in Nosola with her husband. He's an employee in investigative services at the Ministry of Enlightenment." Perceiving our curiosity, she continued, "He used to live with us, but he was called to work in that department a long time ago. He came back later in search of his fiancée." Vicente had been anxious to say something, and finally exclaimed, "W. You have touched on a matter that has aroused my interest very much since I returned from the Earth. When I was there, I didn't have the slightest idea that there was marriage after death. When I attended such celebrations in Nosola, I must confess that my surprise bordered on astonishment. 187. Cecilia smiled and added excitedly, "We felt the same way. But we have to realize that such feelings result from our unhealthy narrow-mindedness regarding marriage on the physical plane. After all, if human marriage is one of the most beautiful acts of life on Earth, why should it be any less so here, where beauty is always more quintessential and pure? Also, it is essential to realize that we don't live apart from wise and just laws. And how happy are those who marry on our planes?" added Vicente, exposing the secret aspirations of his heart. Old Nina made an expressive gesture and remarked, "Yes, for us to enjoy such blessedness here, we must have loved on earth and have been spurred by the noblest impulses of the spirit. To reap such joy, we must have loved with our soul. Those who are dedicated exclusively to their body's desires do not know how to love beyond the bodily form, and they are incapable of feeling the deep spiritual vibrations of undying love." Wishing to turn the discussion back to Isaura, I stated out of curiosity, "Tell us more about the sister who moved to Nosola. I would love to know about her marriage. Cecilia, if you yourself have to wait to be awarded a visit to our city, why was she able to get married and move there permanently?" "That's another story. Isaura couldn't go to her fiancé, because she was less advanced than he was, but since Antonio was more advanced, he could go down to get her. But don't think that the marriage took place without certain preparations or requirements. A groom could go to her and take her to Nosola without any formalities, provided he had received permission from the authorities there. However, one of Isaura's supervisors counseled her on the matter, explaining that as an administrator of a lower-level colony, he could not prevent her from going, but he asked her to prepare herself first for 6 years in Campo di Apas before leaving for good. He wisely added that, in a marriage of souls, it is crucial to purify the hope chest of the sentiments. Our sister had always been very prudent and she accepted his suggestion. She worked for 6 years in our colony, acquiring cultural values and perfecting her mental field. I took in this subtle information without hiding my enormous surprise. I had already had the honor of visiting the couple once, said old Nina, when I received a reward for being assiduous and cheerful, I was allowed to visit Nosola for 15 unforgettable days. Although I visited sublime institutions such as the Forest of Waters, the Hall of Divine Art and the Field of Majestic Prayer, I realize I'm far from being fully acquainted with that enormous city. PLL go the later, though, because I'm continuing with my work and our instructors have always said that all good things await those who know how to serve the good and work with hope. Admiring the beauty of the young women's sentiments, I asked, "But don't you have similar institutions in Campo di Apas? Aren't the temples of joy open to young people?" "Of course," said Cecilia, like someone who did not wish to seem ungrateful for the blessings of the Eternal. "The Lord has given us much in our colony. Nevertheless, we are in the neighborhood of our incarnate brothers and sisters. The storms that reach us demand our constant attention. The scenes that surround us are deeply disturbing. Our city doesn't have ministries of divine union or elevation. We cannot receive higher influences very easily. Our communication and aid work has further need of many people educated in the Gospels in order to be effective. Moreover, it must be in keeping with our objectives. Our colony was founded to offer immediate help. To us, Campo di Apas is more than anything else an advanced healthcare center in the midst of all sorts of dangers, because ignorant and unhappy brothers and sisters surround our efforts on every side. There are aid stations like this one every 6 miles in the zones of our neighborhood. They act as institutions or eternal assistants and active sentries at the same time." She took a longer pause, gauging the effect of her words, and concluded, "When the work becomes burdensome, our governor has the habit of assuring us that we are on a battlefield, but that we have the peace of Jesus within our hearts. No image defines our center as well as that. On the outside, the work is hard and unrelenting, but within us there is a tranquility that we ourselves find difficult to comprehend. Is your work restricted to the confines of the city? I asked. No, it is multifaceted. Aldmina and I, for example, do a lot of work helping the recently incarnated. Our city prepares an average of 15 to 20 reincarnations per day, and it is absolutely necessary for us to help our fellow spirits or wards, at least during the initial phases of their infancy, which includes their first 7 years of corporeal existence. And perhaps because she read the radiant admiration in our eyes, she added, fortunately, our volitation faculties are well developed. We rarely encounter vibrational impediments, and thus we can save a lot of time. Moreover, only our instructors go to work alone. As for us, we venture out only in groups. We need each other's help, not only for the sake of efficiency but also for magnetic support. And smiling quaintly, she concluded, in the work of assisting others and defending ourselves, we cannot manage without the fair and advanced practice of the sincere cooperation of Cecilia at the organ. When I was incarnate, I rarely had the pleasure of attending such a select gathering. All the lamps were magnificently alight, and the large trees outside gently swayed in the breeze, seeming to reflect the moonlight. Graceful couples moved about on the veranda and the long staircases. The castle filled with more and more happiness as the number of guests grew. Alfredo was graciously receiving friends from the next colony and was proud to welcome those who were direct collaborators in his work. Joy shone on every face, and as I observed the beauty of the scene, I pondered the felicity of social life amongst individuals who, far removed from hypocrisy and degrading conventions, had begun to understand and actually practice love one another. We were engrossed in lively conversation, when Alfredo invited us to the music hall. There was an overall feeling of happiness. Mrs. Basler, arm in arm with the gracious Ismelia, seemed pleased with the invitation. 191. The large room was wonderfully illuminated by soft and shining blue lights. Delightful music soothed our souls. A choir of child musicians was performing a melodious piece, accompanied by a large organ much different from the ones on the earth. 80 boys and girls formed a lively, enchanting scene. 50 of them were playing stringed instruments while the other 30 stood singing gracefully. They were performing a lovely barcarolle, to marvelous perfection. I had never heard anything like it on the earth. Deeply moved, I heard Alfredo explaining. The children of the station are our living flowers. They bless us with their fragrance, enchantment and joy, making all our work much more pleasant. We all approached the organ and sat down in comfortable chairs. When the children finished to warm applause, Ismelia asked Cecilia to play something. Me? Said the young woman, blushing. You have come down from the higher realms, where the harmony is sanctified and pure. How could I play anything pleasing to your ears? Nonsense, Cecilia, replied Alfredo's kind wife with a smile on her face. Uplifting music is sublime anywhere. Go ahead, my child. Remind me of the beautiful days of home back on Earth. Before the young Basler could ask what she would like to hear, Ismelia continued, the musical services of the station remind me of our old farm when I would return from boarding school. My parents loved the works of the European composers, and I practiced the piano almost every night. And resting her moist, bright eyes on Cecilia, she concluded, your mom surely remembers my dear old father's favorite piece. Mrs. Basler whispered something to her daughter, who walked confidently over to the great instrument. With inexpressible emotion, we listened to her excellent performance of Bach's Staccato and Fugue in D minor, accompanied by the jubilant children. I gazed at Ismelia's face, noticing from the light in her eyes that her thoughts were far away, perhaps at her former home. She discreetly wiped away her tears and embraced Cecilia affectionately when she had finished. Now, Cecilia, sing a song from your suite, said the noble lady with the tenderness of a mother. Show us your heart. Mr. and Mrs. Basler were happy and touched. The love with which they followed their daughter's every movement could be seen in their gestures. The young woman smiled and turned back to the keyboard, but now she seemed profoundly transfigured. Her beautiful face seemed to reflect a different light coming from a higher place.